Hi everybody, this is Nick, and I will let you know that I will be at FallCon Saturday, September 25th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Pre-sale tickets are available. They're $12 and then $15 at the door. Children under 9 get for free. Come see me and a lot of my other artistic friends and previous guests of the show off their works, and I will be there too selling my comic book The Green Way and promoting the show. Come see me, FallCon, at the Minnesota State Fairgrounds, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Okay, today we have Charlotte Marie with us, and she knows it's dedication time. Charlotte Marie, what would you like to dedicate this episode to?
I would like to dedicate this episode to two future models, the youngest models that I've ever known in my life. Their name is Willow Dillon and Deja Dillon. They are my grandchildren, and I'm going to do my best to get them to walk to walk in my shoes and become an actor and a model. They've had gigs already. Both of them had print jobs. So my kids didn't want to do it, but I'm going to get my grandbabies to do it.
I think it's wonderful. We talked about that in psychology a little bit, how you have more in common with your grandparents than you do have with your regular parents. And that is, well, who do you rebel against? Your parents.
You do.
Who'd your parents rebel against? Their parents. Therefore, you have more in common with your grandparents than... So, I like that. Wonderful. I like the dedication.
Thank you.
All right, we're back on the show, and today we have
Charla Marie Bailey.
Yes, and
it's not Charla just, Marie.
Yes. So we had Cynthia on here before the show, and I said, well, coming up in a couple of weeks, I will have Charla. She's like, you have Charla Marie. Mm-hmm. Yes, but we have previous guest Cynthia was here, and mm-hmm. she wrote and directed a movie that you were also a part of as well.
Correct.
Which is Misplaced Trust.
Misplaced Trust. Yes.
And you were one of the actresses on the movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Angela is my character. Yeah.
How did you get involved with that? If I could just start out the show with that. How did you get involved with that project? Because it's relatively still new.
Yes. Yeah. So Cynthia had been wanting to do some writing. I believe Lori Ruvers approached Cynthia about writing something, directing something she was in. And Cynthia had been wanting to do some writing, and she spent some time, you know, she got together with some friends. I think she went to a retreat or something, and she just spent a lot of time writing this script out. And she had a meeting with me, Gabby, Allie, who you say you're going to have on your show next.
Yeah.
And Lori, and knew that she wanted us in it. I think there was room for other people in there at some point, but it narrowed it down to basically the four of us.
It's an interesting short because it's a lot of, well, it's all female cast, right?
Yes.
Maybe Jeremy is in the first, but predominantly all female.
Yeah. Yep. Predominantly all female, even behind the camera, predominantly.
Yeah. And a lot of the production assistants were all females.
Yes.
Yeah. So that had to be a great experience with
it
that.
It felt real good because it was empowering, you know. It was like, hey, what's up, sis? What's up, girl? How you doing? You know, and it just felt good to know that this is what we were doing because we can do it.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think it helps even behind the camera too.
Yeah.
And when I did my first film, I was like, the first thing I said is I want to have as many female on the crew as we can get possible, even though we'll have one on the cast. I want to get as many behind the camera as possible, even if they're new, because I think it helps to even have more than just, it used to be 50-50. I think it's better if we have more women on set than men do. We've had enough of almost entirely men.
Yeah.
And I think it's nice to have far more women on crew.
Yeah. It just felt good and made you relax more and be who you are because, you know, you knew that power was there.
Right.
It felt good because I don't get the chance to experience that too often.
Yeah, so it, I think you can find it. I think it's been, she submitted to quite a few.
Ooh, she's taken off with that. Submitted it to all sorts of festivals. Is winning awards everywhere, different states. So if you want to see it, I'm not really sure how you can see it because it's still in all the different festivals. And, you know, when it's in a festival, they don't want you, you know, showing it to everyone.
So if you want to just push pause, listeners, and go back and Cynthia, in the previous episode, she'll go a little more detail about that movie.
Okay.
But you've been done other stuff. You've been in commercials, done theater and movies.
Yes.
Has acting always been part of your life?
Yes, it has. When I was little, I was about 7, I saw the movie Grease, and I knew that I wanted to do that. And I saw it, and I said, that's what I want to do when I grow up. And throughout grade school, I tried to get placed in the plays, but they were always saying to me, oh, you got such great speaking voice. We're going to make you do this Martin Luther King speech. I got to memorize this whole speech and perform it. I'm like, I just want to act on stage. I just don't want to be a tree, okay? But it never happened until I got to college.
Okay.
And so then that's when I started doing my acting.
Well, did you go specifically in college for acting, or did you have another degree that you're pursuing?
No, I was trying to pursue a legal career. I wanted to be a paralegal, and I kept taking acting classes until my counselor was like, Sharla, maybe you should... become an actor, because this is truly where your heart is pulling you. And I was like, but no, I can't eat off of actors, you know, unless I blow up and become famous. So I tried to do the right thing, and I actually did go into the legal field for 20 years. I was a legal secretary, you know.
Those are committed hours too.
Yes. 9 to 5.
Right, 9 to 5.
Yeah, Monday through Friday.
My good friend Brad Perry, who does a comic strip, Pirate Mike, he used to be a lawyer. In fact, what happened to his transition, pretty much a judge told him because he was doodling on his legal pad in court.
Wow. Fun.
Maybe you should pursue that instead of being a lawyer. And he's done. Now he's a Now his strip is nationwide. It gets on newspapers in Germany and overseas, and it's a worldwide syndicate if you want a pirate bike. But that's how he started.
Check it out.
Some lawyers like, maybe, you know, the judge, maybe you should work on that more. Then.
Right? That's where his heart was.
Yeah.
You know, over the 20 years, I did do some acting, you know, because I was in college too. So I would do all the theater plays at night. So I was gone, you know, a lot. I started, however, got into it via modeling. I answered an ad on television when I was in Chicago, and they were looking for models, and my friend dared me to audition.
Okay.
And I called up and I was like, do I need to wear a two-piece? And he giggled and was like, no. And I was like, yeah, okay. And I'm going to come in and audition. And so I was a Royce Glamour model in Chicago for a couple of years. And I would drag my kids to the shows. And so maybe that's why they didn't want to go into acting or modeling, because they were tired of it from, you know, having to go to rehearsals with me and, you know, stuff like that. But that's how I got into it, and then I pursued it in college. And while I was a legal secretary, I would do all my theater acting at night. And just a couple of years ago, decided to quit.
The acting?
I decided to quit that career.
Oh, the paralegal.
Yes. Well, I went to school to be a paralegal, but I ended up being a legal secretary. And in the last position that I actually held, I was the receptionist. I was a legal receptionist for these attorneys that I had worked with for like 10 years. And they didn't need another secretary at that firm. It was a small firm. And I knew I wanted to work with them because that was my family. I knew I wanted to work with them. And I said, okay, I'll stay on as the receptionist. I was doing some floating secretarial work, but we just changed it to receptionist. But I ended up leaving because my supervisor at that time made a comment about acting not being my bread and butter, you know. And I don't even recall now what it was we were having a meeting about.
Yeah.
But she was like, come on, Charlotte, let's be honest. You know, acting is not your bread and butter. This is, oh, she was trying to get me to want to do more. And I was like, I don't want to do more. I want to be the receptionist. I'm okay with that. And that's when I realized people have jobs that are their jobs and they're okay with it. You know, you could be a security guard and that's your job. People shouldn't be trying to tell you you should be a police officer. Well, I don't want to be a police officer. I want to be the security guard. This is where I want to be. Yeah. And so I gave my 2 weeks notice. And I was like, you know what? It's my 2 weeks. Because I love acting. And I was trying my best to, you know, on my lunch breaks, go and do an audition here, audition there, you know. And I did. I were, you know, doing some commercials here and there and using vacation time. You know, but yeah.
I used to have, for over 20 years, be a football referee. Mm-hmm. And I just quit in 2018 after doing it for 20 years, realizing that even though I love doing it, and I loved it, it's a commitment of knowing the rules and the mechanics, is even off season when you're not officiating, it's a lot of going to camps, a lot of the mechanics, and it's a really a full-time job, mm-hmm. even though it's considered part-time. And then I would get frustrated knowing that even though I like to do it, it's taken away from what I really want to do, is do comic books, do writing, do movies. And then when it dawned on me, it's taking away what I want to do, and I'm going to referee games where I tell kids, if you're doing this because your parents told you to, stop doing it. I only want to ref kids that want to be here. And then I realized, I don't want to be here. I want to go back and start doing the creative, like this creative stuff I used to do.
Yeah.
And so that's why I stopped doing it in 2018, even though I still love doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But it, like I said, it took away from what I really wanted to do.
Yeah.
Now I just have a part-time job where I can now focus on doing this full-time shows, podcasting, meet other people, talk about movies and acting and doing creative stuff. So, right. I think don't listen to other people. People kind of think they know better than you.
Mm-hmm.
If you really want to do modeling, really work at it. Don't just, you know, and if you're a waitress saying, well, I'm an actress, are you going to auditions? No, then you're still a waitress.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had this conversation with other people. It's hard, especially it's hard because you're going to hear no. And I told my niece Ruby, like, you're going to hear no 9 out of 10.
You are. Yeah. You really are.
And don't get comfortable with it. Just understand that's part of the mechanics of everything, because there's certain things people are looking for.
Right. It's just thickening your skin. Now, don't listen to people that, you know, unless they're the judge. The judge telling you that you're doodling. Maybe you should be a cartoonist.
Or listen to yourself. I don't want to be here. I'm going to be here reffing football games.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be here. I want to be home writing my script, and that's taking away time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, find out what do you want to spend time
on? Yes. Yeah. Where do you spend most of your time? What do you spend most of your time doing? That's more than likely where you desire, where you want to be.
Yeah. So with the modeling, were you doing, like, was it just a specific, like, full body modeling? Mm-hmm. Or is it just like, because sometimes modeling is with the hands, with your face, with everything, but you were doing pretty much full body.
Yeah. In Chicago, when I was a Royce Glamour model, we were modeling clothes. So it was full body. We did runway shows. We toured different areas.
Yeah.
To, like, when a store opened up, they would give us the clothes that they wanted us to model, you know. And back then it was, you know, we were like, we want to do it because we want to do it, right? But the benefit was, we're going to give you this nice elaborate dinner and you might get a few dollars here or there, you know. It wasn't like now, modeling through my agent, where you know you're going to get paid a certain amount of money.
Yeah. Get paid for a dinner, and thank you for here's the gas on the way here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say modeling, everybody thinks it's just a simple just presentation, but you have to be ready for, I mean, your hands have to be ready, your face has to be ready, because sometimes you don't know what you're getting into. And I've told that to many people, especially starting out, especially doing acting. If you want to do commercials like you have to be almost full body ready.
You do.
Yeah.
You do. And when I know that I'm doing a Shop HQ modeling show, I know I need to be manicured and pedicured because you might be modeling some sandals and you don't want your feet on TV all jacked up. They zoom in on those shoes and your toes are right there. So, you know, you make sure your hair is done, you know, makeup. They might be showing some sunglasses. So make sure your lipstick's not smeared or anything like that. Look good.
But it's just one of those misnomers that people think, oh, you just show up and work. But it's a full-time commitment because you have to be almost ready all the time because mm-hmm. the call. I've had a couple times where I booked interviews with people on the show and they're like, well, I just got a commercial. I got to leave. Bye. Yeah, sorry.
Gotta go. Gotta go prepare.
Right. Which I always put in my little memo box. I understand. If you give me just at least 24 hours, I appreciate it.
Yes.
Sometimes I know that's even less than you get.
Right.
Yeah.
And it worked that we're doing this on a Sunday too. You know?
Yeah, right. Yeah. So you've done commercials.
Yes, I've done a lot of commercials. You know, I've heard people say, oh, you're a commercial actress. I'm not just a commercial actress, but I do okay with the commercials. There's a commercial out right now. I'm sure Warner Stellion would love this, but there's a commercial out right now that is getting a lot of play and people take pictures and they send it to me. Feel free to keep doing that. I love it. They say, ha, I just saw you. And my kids are sending me pictures. My friend said they just saw you on TV. And I'm like, sweet. Okay. So that one is getting a lot of play. But yeah, I do pretty good with doing the commercials.
I think it's beneficial with a lot of people who want to be really artistic with acting and modeling don't really want to venture to that. But I think it's far more beneficial to at least entertain, at least try to do commercials, because there's not a lot of times you'd be doing movies where you get the time to prepare.
Mm-hmm.
And commercials help you with that because it's bing, bang, boom, get it done.
Right.
And they don't really tell you what they want sometimes. They just tell you, this is a commercial, go there.
I have one right now that's like that. I got an audition coming up and I'm like, I don't know how to prepare for this. What am I supposed to do?
Well, I know one. I won't name her name, but she has multiple wigs in her car ready. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Case.
Oh, you want a blonde? Okay.
Yeah, right.
You looking for a blonde? Here I am. So it's almost like you're sometimes feels like you're almost living in your out of your car almost sometimes.
Yes. And I had I have these Tupperware boxes that I would put extra outfits in, and I've needed to rely on that because one day I showed up to Shop HQ and we were supposed to be doing a commercial, not a modeling gig, but a commercial to promote something. And I forgot my wardrobe. Because they always tell you, you know, pick out what, you know, something that looked like this and bring it with you. And I had it in a wardrobe bag and I was going to take it with me. And I left the wardrobe bag, but because I had some like black leggings and a drape, you know, and an extra blouse and extra shoes in my car, I was able to say, hey, I got this. You know, and it was a snowstorm that day too. So it wouldn't have been beneficial for me to turn around and try and go back in that and come back, you know. And so yes, keep you
almost
know.
Yeah, but it almost feels like you're living out of your car. When I was refereeing, it was the same way. I would have two bags of this equipment because, you know, you sometimes, hey, you got to do a game here,
mm-hmm.
and it's way out, 2 hours away, and I would mm-hmm. live out of my car almost. I would have my equipment and everything and ready to go. And I kind of feel the same for you because you have a uniform. And sometimes that uniform is dirty from last night's in the refereeing in the mud.
I used to date a referee, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
What sport, you know?
It was for baseball.
Baseball?
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
He loved
baseball.
You're
going to swallow a lot of dirt.
Yeah.
Then you're going to swallow a lot of dirt mm-hmm. beyond the outfield and then behind the plate because the wind kicks up and you're just...
Yeah.
Why is my throat so raspy? I didn't. Oh, that's right. We're in the dirt for hours.
Yeah. I always got all that backup stuff. I even have blanket and noodles and water. I got a heater in there, you know, just in case, you know.
I know somebody who brings their little sewing kit. It'd be two takes. So they can sit there.
Nice.
Keep busy. Yeah. Keep
I wish I could knit and crochet and stuff. I can crochet, but I can't knit. My friend tried to show me. Another person you should have on your show is Joetta Wright, if you haven't had her on your show yet.
I have to call her up.
Yes, that woman is awesome. So, yeah. And she tried to teach me how to knit. So
tried.
Yeah, she tried. She, I learned at that moment while we were doing that show together. I knew what I was doing, but then you put it down. It's like Spanish. If you don't use it, you lose it.
Right.
So.
It's almost like me playing gin. I forgot how to do it now. You're going to have to reteach me. So.
Mm-hmm.
Are you comfortable watching yourself on film?
Oh, yes, very.
Okay, all right.
I have no problem. I love it. I'm like, please, I want to see it. Where is it? And it's so hard tracking down the material. But yes, I watch myself. And of course, I'm going to critique myself. You know.
I know that's one of the things Cynthia does with her. Let's, after the movie, let's sit down and talk about, you know, what we could do good, what something else we could done different, you know, always trying to get better.
Mm-hmm, right. And I watch it and I'm like, oh, I could have did it like this. I should have did that. Well, next time I get a role with a character similar, you know, similar like that, then okay, I'll think about that and add that in. I'll know now.
I would just use Cynthia's movie. Did you work costuming with her, or did they have something idea? Did you know? Do you remember?
They asked what I had, and I think I showed them pictures, and they picked out. They told me what colors, definitely what colors. It was important that I wore red, and so I had a red dress and I had a black blazer, and I sent them pictures, and it was like, okay. And we want to see you in it. Yep, that works. Mm-hmm. And so
it's one of the things I always, when I do my movies, I work with movies and I have actors, and they're like, what, I just give them a little outline of what I want and let them kind of figure it out. Because my movie, I was like, well, we're going to work with black and a little bit of gold, something of a trim, a medallion.
Okay.
So think of something like that. But yeah. Movies asking us to have some kind, all the figures wear kind of something black to wear.
Yeah.
And just to have it play, because I think that's crucial for acting. Is costuming.
It is. It makes me feel like, you know, I need to know so I can know who I am. I feel, you know, some people are like, no, you should just be able to do the character. No, I need to have something on that's going to make me feel like I'm really in that character. My hair has to be a certain way. I have to wear my makeup a certain way. You know what I'm saying? I could probably get away with not doing those things if I had to, but it really helps with the development.
Yeah. Well, if you're ever buying the copy of it, it's called Matchstick Men.
Yes.
Behind the scenes of Nicolas Cage process of making the character is so fascinating, because they just have, it's a full budget movie with Ridley Scott, but they have all the outfits out. And here Nicolas Cage is trying outfits, and he's trying to mold his character where the outfits, and he's like saying to himself, okay, even though he's a con artist, how about he doesn't like curse words? That's really frightening and really angry at me that people use curse words. How that, and really, just go for it, man. Yeah. And they had all these arrangements of accessories, like maybe he wears a gold watch, maybe a silver watch. And watching Nick Cage just try to pick what his character would use, even as a con artist and very obsessive compulsive con artist. And what about this knot? Not even that, like this knot. Would that be for him and everything? So this goes behind the scenes of that movie, which is, I don't think anybody very much remembers it, Matchstick
Men. I remember that. And I will look up the behind the scenes, because Nicolas Cage, he does a lot of that type of work where he really puts a lot of thought into his characters, you know?
Right. He just did a movie called Pig.
Okay,
and everybody
yeah.
thinks it's a horror movie, but he's just a simple person out of the woods.
He doesn't speak at all, right?
He hardly ever speaks, but he's a former chef. And then I guess he spent all this time learning to cook, and actually was cooking on set.
And that's how he does it.
So when you watch other movies, do you focus on acting, or can you just enjoy the presentation of it?
I used to just focus on the acting, but then once I made my movie for Z-Fest back in 2020, and this was technically 2019, but we saw it in 2020 before the pandemic hit.
Right, yeah.
And so once I did my film, now when I watch a movie, television, I can see the directing. I'm like, oh, that was probably a director's choice right there.
Yeah.
I can see the lighting. I'm looking at the setting. Now, I could always, you know, before I would always see, oh, wait, she's got a wet spot on her shirt. Now she doesn't. Now it's there again. Stuff like that I would, you know, seen all the time. But now I'm looking at everything when I watch because I've been behind the scenes now, well, behind the camera.
Yeah, why that particular shot and why everything.
Yes. Right. And the angles and stuff. And I'm just like, wow, I'm becoming one of those people that when, you know, you ask if, you know, did you like that movie? And usually I'm very easy to please. And now I'm like, well, yes. But, you know, I noticed and I'm like, Sharla, stop it. I can call myself Sharla, you guys, but.
You can. I was just, noticed because we just critiqued for my YouTube channel where I work with Kyle Gothy. We just, a Patreon selection was Talented Mr. Ripley.
Oh,
and that's something I would never pick myself. But the Patreon said, well, why don't you guys critique it and see what you do? So I went back and watched it. And knowing after I did movies and being on a movie set, because this came out when I was in college and it just was a film, you know, I was in film school. Mm-hmm. What I really like it is how all the everybody's scenes are only the person talking occupies the camera. So they're even though they're sitting at a table, mm-hmm. they'll just shoot the scene of them talking mm-hmm. and they'll cut to this certain scene of them talking. They would never share the scene together, and it's almost an emphasis that even though they're together, they're still alone, they're still isolated.
Wow.
And so that was a great little thing to notice in that movie as well.
Okay,
so cool. Even you talk about how you make the camera and how you do acting and everything. Yeah,
I'm remembering a scene where I remember one person speaking and the other person was in the background, you know, like almost blurred in the background. But that focus was on the one person.
Yeah.
Matt Damon, I think it was. But, yeah, now when you say that.
Because it's a simple setup of dialogue. You talking, you saying your lines to somebody, but we aren't emphasizing each of these people, even though they're sharing a table,
mm-hmm.
emphasize that they're still alone.
Mm-hmm.
They're still by themselves. And they shot the very busy art direction. The rooms are very busy. But even though it's very full, it's still kind of empty. Like a lot of stuff is just filled up just to fill it up. There's really mm-hmm. nothing of a value to it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of emphasis of the movie as well. Also the characters who really look great on the outside. Okay. But there's nothing to them. They're shallow on the inside.
Okay.
Yeah. So important how to make films.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what was the movie that you did for Z-Fest?
My film was called...
Yeah.
It was Dream Killer.
That's right.
It was called Dream Killer, and it was about an actress who wanted to be a successful, you know, movie star. You know, it's about me. And she gets all these commercials, and she's talking to her husband about, oh, what should I wear? And they say, don't wear red. And they say, wear blue. But everybody else wears blue. And I go to the audition, and there's other black women there that looks just like me. We're all wearing the same outfits. But, you know, and that happens sometimes, too. And by the end of the movie, I get my dream, you know.
Did you write it?
I did. I wrote it. I produced it. I knew I was executive producing it, but I didn't know I was producing it until I talked to my good friend Brianna, and she said, well, you are producing it, Charlotte. I was like, oh, I didn't know that.
You're kind of doing the producing kind of stuff for the movie.
I was like, well, I know I want this, and I need to get this, and that done. And I found everyone that I wanted to be in that movie was in it. Everyone that I wanted to be involved was involved. And it was very warming because when I was writing it, for those specific people. And I knew that I wanted certain people to help me behind the scenes, and those people were available, and it was lovely. It was wonderful. And Brianna did end up helping me anyway. She did come to help me, but it was wonderful. We ended up winning 2 awards for that show. We won Best Makeup. My friend Brandon A. Jackson played my favorite fairy godmother in that movie and won Best Makeup. And then Best Genre. Best fantasy film. It was sci-fi and fantasy, and we were fantasy.
Yeah.
And we didn't get a shout out a word, but that's okay. Because the audience's reaction was rewarding enough. So right. I knew I did a good job on that shout out. But anywho's.
Did you want to go back to doing that again?
Yes.
Directing and writing and everything?
Yes. And I'm constantly writing stuff and making little bits of things here and there. I made some fake commercials. When I say, you know, I don't have permission to use their stuff, but I've made my own little commercials and a documentary and stuff like that and put it on my YouTube page. And I've just been a little hesitant to put stuff out there because, you know, when you put stuff out there that you've made, it's personal. And if it gets rejected, you know, it's like, ouch. You know, where if I'm doing somebody else's stuff, you're going to criticize it. All right, whatever. You know, I'll do better. But this is mine. And I think that's why I have a fear of doing stand-up. Because I think I'm funny. But I don't know if I'm that funny to, you know, entertain people for at least, you know, for 5 minutes standing up, you know, coming up
with
stuff.
Nowhere to hide.
I don't know.
Yeah,
right. You're right there on a stage by yourself. And people heckle. So,
Before we go to break, I have to share a story. My friend John, who used to do stand-up, and he was, I think he did it in Ohio. He was doing a tour, just driving around. This is early 90s or whatever, mid-90s. And it just so happened it was hot. And the place, the bar, he was going to do stand-up, had the air conditioning broke, so they had to open up the windows. Ooh. And so it was late night, and no kidding, every time he told a joke, the crickets out the window, you could hear them.
Oh no.
How's everybody doing tonight?
Sad.
Which is kind of perfect. All right, we're going to take a little break and back more with Sharla Marie.
Hey everybody, this is Kelly Reynolds and I'm the host of Boobies and Newbies, the podcast that asks novice romance readers to think outside the dick in a box. Join me for a new episode every Friday as we review romance novels with non-romance readers. From the sweet, loving, fairy tale romances of the Highlands. Who cares about Up Against the Wall by the fruit trees? Yes. Like, where's the dragon?
Inside the belly of a dragon.
To the naughty erotic threesomes with Navy SEALs.
Sex was a 10. I mean, you cannot get any better than this book. Come
okay,
on, you guys.
Good.
Really.
We read it all. Check us out at Boobies Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram. Listen to previous episodes on any podcast streaming platform. You can also support Boobies and Newbies on Patreon.com for lots of bonus booby content and early episode releases.
Hold up, we're alive. Never knew if I'd be back. Up on the same track, the way you know. Don't know where I went. Can't recall the stock again. Gave up my will and let it get too far. And I'm feeling bad.
All right, we're back with Sharla Marie. And before we get to it, we have to mention, because we'll put a shout out, you are wearing a specific necklace.
Yes, I'm wearing a necklace, and I can't remember.
Even though the audience can't see it, but we'll post a picture on our social medias and everything.
Yes, it's a hand with some diamonds in it. The hand is like down, in a down, you know, with the fingers pointing down. But my sister runs a business, and it's called All Things Pretty. LLC.com is where she sells the jewelry, sunglasses, accessories.
Okay.
All Things Pretty. So.
Like even rings?
Rings? Does she sell rings? She might earrings? Sell rings. Okay. She definitely sells earrings. Okay. And she sent me a pair of earrings and this necklace. And I know she sells lip gloss and sunglasses. And hats, just accessories.
So, yeah, we'll definitely put
it
the link down.
It makes sense to tell what it is, right, that she sells.
We'll definitely put the link down below if people are interested. I'll definitely check it out myself. Sharla Marie, there are some things people can see you in right now. And let's bring that up. Something on Amazon?
Yes, I do. I'm there is this film called Miles Between Us. Miles Between Us is on Amazon. It's a Christian film, and it's really just about the journey that a daughter and her a daughter and father makes on, you know, the highway. They have to take this journey. He has to take her to college, and it's really about how they reconnect, you know, because they, you know,
there's been distance.
There was distance, and now they have to take this long road trip, and it's really about them connecting. Yeah. So Miles Between Us. And then a movie that was called Black, but now is Black in Minneapolis, that David Buchanan did.
Yeah, it's David, right? Yes. It's a full feature.
Yes, it is. And that is also on Amazon to see.
Thank you for making the correction, because people were asking, you know, they were asking, they can't find it, and it was really called Black, but now it's called Black in Minneapolis.
Correct. Yep.
Did you guys film that in Minneapolis?
We did. We filmed it, in Minneapolis. And then, literally in Minneapolis. Because I'm like, you know, when you film movies, you know, you might be in a house in St. Paul, and then you might be at the gym in Minneapolis or something like that. But yeah, I believe we were in Minneapolis. I think all the scenes were filmed in Minneapolis.
So what did you do in Miles Between Us?
In Miles Between Us, the lead actor, I was his assistant. So I was trying to keep him running his business. Oh boy, I got to think. And it's been like 5 years. I have to think now. But he ran a talent agency.
Okay.
And it was my job to make sure that he was connecting with talent and getting the talent that everybody, you know, wanted to see. I was like the person, the trouble person, the person that was making sure that all the ducks were in a row for him. If he didn't do it himself, then I had to, I don't know, what do you call that stuff that Olivia Pope did? I don't know. I can't think of it. Problem solver for my boss.
Solutions.
Yeah. Solutions manager and assistant. Yes.
But sometimes it's when you, especially, I'm glad you brought it up, because when you do an acting, people think I'm just going to be part of on camera, but acting also navigates you to assisting other people as well. I mean, Lori's done casting director on sets too, where, so with acting experience, but also behind the work as well. And I think that helps people to understand that even though acting is something I'll behind the camera as well, there's a lot more things to it than just what you see in front of the film.
True that. Yeah. But in the film, that was my role.
Yeah.
My role was to assist him. I was his secretary, and I had to make sure that he stayed on top of things, because he wanted to do this, that, and the other. It's like, wait, come back. You have to do this. You got this going on. At one, so you can't do this. You can't be out of town for this. You have to come back to this. In Black in Minneapolis, I was Toussaint Morrison's wife in that film. And that was different, because David told me to be softer. He said, be softer, be softer. And I was like, wow, this is weird, because I'm like, I thought I was soft, you know, so that was different. It was different for me, but I loved that experience, because then it made me realize that there was something that I apparently was doing that I didn't know I was doing, you know what I'm saying? So I was like, awesome. And then I see the movie and I'm like, she's so gentle. That's what David wanted, okay.
When did you guys film that in the summer?
Yep. It was like, I want to say probably it was spring?
Okay.
It might have been spring.
Did you get 2018?
Probably.
Probably 2018.
Because what year is this? Yeah. You know, I lost a year, you know.
I know.
I lost the whole year.
There's no way we're close to 2020. So, yeah, but, Morris's wife. And then how did you get involved with that? How did you get involved with the movie?
I auditioned for that.
Okay.
And Toussaint was present. You know, David was there. So when I read that, and I didn't know what Toussaint's role was at that time. I didn't know if he was going to be in it or not. But I know that he read with me, and there were some other people there too. And so I auditioned for it and then went home and prayed, because I was like, I really like this and I want to do this and I want to work with them and I hope I get it. And so, I was lucky enough to to get cast in there.
And that's another one people can find on Amazon Prime.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Black in Minneapolis and Miles Between Us are both on Amazon Prime. And if you want to see me be funny, Yes, I do. Because like I said, I think I'm funny. But I got to play this character named Ariel. And she considers herself like a sex guru, a goddess type person. And she sells these oils. And, you know, and I was like, ooh, I get to do this because see what I don't know. A lot of people might know this, but I think I'm sexy. So, and I used to tell people that. I was like, yes, I think I'm sexy. But I got to do this character where I was like, ooh, I get to be goofy sexy and sell these oils, you know. And so there's this show on Sika TV that is called Femme 101, F-E-M 101.
Okay.
And I'm in episode 4. So that was a lot of fun. I was selling those sensual oils. That was a lot of fun. And then there's a music video coming out.
Okay.
And by Darius Dotch. He's an actor here, an actor and a musician in Minneapolis. And he's got this music video coming out called Soul Food. So, you know, his focus is on him, but I was in it. So hopefully you all will look for it. It'll be out in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Yep, we're done filming.
So it's Darius Dotch.
D-A, and I think his name is spelled D-A-R-I-U-S, Dotch, D-O-T-C-H.
Oh, D-O-T-C-H, okay. Mm-hmm. I'm probably be looking for that in the future.
Yes, in a couple of weeks.
Okay, if you want to give the studio the show a heads up, if we can find it, we'll put the link down below.
All right, we'll do.
Appreciate it. So.
Yep, so that's a music video. It sounded pretty good when we could hear the song playing while we were doing the video. And I was like, oh yeah, this is nice. And there was some parts where I giggled because I'm like, ha, 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 I know what you're saying there. Okay. You know? So that was cool. And that's as far as the film stuff is concerned. As far as theater is concerned, I'm doing Reboot right now. So it's by this theater company called Walking Shadow Theater. It's Walking Shadow Theater Company. And they did this play called Reboot, and it's an online puzzle play. So it's like an escape room.
Oh.
Yeah, for online. Okay. And so anybody in the world can play it. Anybody in the United States at least can play it. It's called Reboot.
So anybody in the world.
Yeah, anybody in the world can play it. It's online. And it's like I said, it's like an escape room. You collect these clues, you play with a team, and I think it's 4 to 8 people, you know, that you play in this team, and which is great because like I said, when we weren't on the radio, you know, I might be 100 watt, but I'm not the sun. You know what I'm saying? So I need team members to help me out sometime.
Love that.
And so there was some areas where I was like, oh, I know the answer to that. It's going to be this. It's going to be this. And that was it. And then there was some stuff that was really like, you know, scientific that I was like, and then there was somebody in that group that just knew. It was like, oh, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, wow, yep, that's right. And we were breaking through these doors to get to the end. And my part in that was I was in the video. I do some video clips from back in the day, back in the 80s. In the 80s, and I know you know,
oh,
80s
yes,
was
I
an
do.
Awesome time. I love the 80s. But so, yeah, that was fun. I played Beth Barton, a scientist from the 80s, and you get to watch my video clips. It's a theater production, but because we're online, you know, they had to videotape some stuff. And then they have two people that are live in the studio that you are interacting with.
It seems really weird. It almost seems theater acting and film acting at the same time.
Right? That was kind of cool. I'm like, well, okay. I was really trying to picture it in my head. But when it all came together, because they never let us know what all the moving pieces were.
Oh, clever.
So when I got to play it online, I was like, what that did, what happened there? What? And I didn't know all of that. And Pisa, he designed the set, and it's just awesome. And John directed it, and it's just great. And
that does help a little bit when you have a nice design set.
Yeah, that design. You guys will have to go online and play it to see the design.
If you can find it, we'll put the link down below for people to find that as well. And it's called Reboot.
It's called Reboot by Walking Shadow Theater. And it's running from now till September 19th.
Okay.
So it's got I think it's a long run. It's a pretty long, decent long run. And then also, I am in Full Circle Theaters, Glass and Lady M, through the Minnesota Fringe Festival, if you've heard of it. Minnesota Fringe Festival. And Lindsay Bushnell, she wrote Glass. And then Martha Johnson, who is on a founding member for Full Circle, she wrote Lady M, an interpretation of Shakespeare's Lady M. And they put the two shows together. I think the show is about 45 minutes. The first one is like a feminist dystopian absurdist kind of play where you have these four women. Well, we called ourselves goddesses because we had to find a goddess to get in tuned with. And I was Apple Lady. And Oogie, she was Sweeping Woman. Marcy was the two lady. And then we had Alice, and she was the rocking, you know, she was rocking a baby throughout the show. And we're in this room. We cannot leave this room because our boss, employer, he only give you so many blessings. And you have to have a certain amount of blessings to leave. So every step is a blessing, you know, so count your blessings, right?
I get it. Okay.
And the one with the most was Sweeping Woman, and Sweeping Woman wanted to leave. So it was like, I'm going to try and encourage you to go. You know what I'm saying? And so you have to see this. You have to see the play, see if we actually leave that room or not. And then the Lady M is the scene where she's washing her hands. And I played the doctor, and we're observing her. And then Miss McDuff comes in. Lady McDuff comes in as well. And so it was pretty cool. We did it the year before last, but we filmed it. And so it's streaming on the Minnesota Fringe website for the rest of the month, for the rest of the month of August.
Okay, so we'll put that link up as well. And the title, the title again for my audience.
It is called Glass and Lady M by Full Circle Theater Company.
And that was, actually, it's a stage performance, but you actually filmed it.
Yes, it's a stage performance that was filmed. So I think that's pretty cool.
I think so too, because a lot of people, especially if we did stage acting, there's a different approach to discipline of stage acting.
There is.
To film, but you still can capture your stage performance and see. Yeah.
That was a learning curve for me because I come from theater. And so I've only been doing film for about 5 years. And I don't think I did Black 5 years ago. I would say I was at least doing it a year before. But then again, I lost a year. Who knows? What year is this? I don't know. So it was a learning curve because I remember going to auditions and it was only one director that was kind enough to tell me, you're too loud. You're too loud. You gotta be more quiet, you know. You're making that scale thing go all the way into red. Yeah. There you go. Making the needle jump all the way to red. And so it took some training. And my husband, he is very soft spoken. You know, just some little South Dakota boy with a little tumbleweed sticking out his little stick, broom, straw sticking out his mouth, shuffling his feet, you know.
Right,
he's very soft-spoken.
I get it. I love it. Yeah.
And I'm from south side of Chicago, so I'm loud.
If you whisper, nobody's going to hear you.
Right. My dad is loud. My sister Donna is loud. We just loud. And so I, at home, would mimic my husband and try, you know, talk like him because I was like, maybe that'd help me with the film.
With the film acting.
Yeah. And then I did this road trip because I do crisis intervention training, and I went on this road trip with my friend Derek Mosley, and I remember us standing so far apart, and I was like, Derek, can you hear me? He was like, yeah. I was like, what? You can hear me? Yeah, I can hear you just fine. I was like, what? And that's when I knew I had figured it out. It's like, okay. And then your movements has to be, you know, they have to be smaller too.
Right, yeah.
You know, because you know, you're bigger on stage because they're not going to see all the eye movement. So maybe you have to move your head a certain way to, you know, to convey that attitude that you're trying to give off. So it's two different ways to do it, but I love them. I love them both.
One of my favorite film scenes is Meryl Streep and Robert De Niro in The Deer Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. It's just them two. And mm-hmm. It's Robert De Niro coming back from Vietnam War, and he has PTSD. He wasn't ready. They were going to have a big party for him to come back, and he wasn't ready to hang out with a lot of people. And he waited for everybody to leave, and he just wanted to, you know, he's knocking the door, and Marilyn's left. And you see them act on film.
Yeah.
And how he's constantly looking for a way to exit, just to lead the conversation. And her kind of like, how do I embrace you without scaring you off?
Yeah.
And having this, oh, it's nice to see you. But they play it so, like, they're just quiet. But you see the intensity with it.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful scene. It's just them two in the trailer and him coming back, and he's still in uniform. But he still has... and the nervousness of like being in war, like where's my exits, where can I leave this, I want to flee, you know. He's still not used to being home yet.
I want to see that because I love them both.
Well,
Robert De Niro is like one of my favorite actors. That's my favorite.
I think it's one of the most well acted assembles of acting, because you have John Cazale, who Meryl Streep was in a relationship with, and John Cazale is in The Godfather, too.
Mm-hmm.
And he did Dog Day Afternoon with Al Pacino. So he was everybody actually learned from John Cazale on set. Robert De Niro, they all taught, because he's one had experience, and he would help them out how we do from film to stage. And it's wonderful.
I'm going
to
look that up. Yeah. You got two of the best actors out there in that one film. So I'm going to have to look into that.
Would you, have you done voiceover?
Yes, I've done voiceover. And I was going to say one of my other favorite actors is Viola Davis. Davis shared a voiceover that I did on Instagram. Yes. And I was like, oh my God, yes.
I would too, right.
I was like, that's my voice. So, and it was for, of course, I'm going to blank now. I can't remember it. So I'm going to have to go through my phone and think. Coached on that, you know.
It's another tool to add in your toolbox. People think, oh, you just go in there, just say it. I've learned, because I've actually had to do commercials for myself for the show. People write in what they want, and I have to say it. And it's almost like, God dang it. You know, usually it takes maybe about 30 takes to get a right one.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of deceiving of, oh, you just go in and act in your pajamas. Well, you can bring your pajamas. That's fine. But there's certain a distant skill of how you present it, especially voiceover. Because you're filling in the space with just your voice.
It's so interesting, and I'm learning a lot right now about it. And my agent sends me out on a lot of voiceovers, and bless them, I love it. But like you said, 9 out of 10 times you're gonna get a no, right? And I'm like, what am I doing wrong? I don't get it. And I'm really hoping to master that. My husband and I. Because I like to work with my hands, and I'm the type of person, and it's funny because I was just on Facebook. My friend was like, who was excited to, you know, see Radio Shack? Me, because I would get cameras and I break them to see how they work and put them back together. I would get radios and do the same thing. I like to work with my hands. And so my husband and I, because my husband is an independent contractor, so he has experience with this, built me a recording studio. so that I could do all these voiceovers. I'm prepared for the pandemic. And while I'm building it, I'm like, what if nothing happens? I don't care. I'm going to build it anyway because it, this is fun. Yeah. Bam, bam, bam. Hand me a screwdriver. Hand me a drill. So it was a lot of fun to build it. And I have recorded things in there for auditions, but I haven't had to use that booth yet for a professional gig. I have the equipment, but I've been fortunate enough to go into the studios and have them put it together.
Okay.
You know, so. Right. But yeah, voiceover artists as well.
Mom, it's one of the things the great actor Spencer Tracy said. If you can figure out what you're doing, what to do with your hands in the scene, you got 90% of it done.
I think I have heard that. Yeah. Yeah,
you know what to do with your hands because acting is with hands too.
Yep, yep, yep.
So if you know how to navigate that as well,
mm-hmm.
Charlotte Marie, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
This is a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Yeah. Before we go, is there another thing you want to mention before we go?
No, I don't think I want to mention anything else. I want to thank my husband, my three children, my brother Jason, because they've always been there for me, as far as, you know, acting, modeling, anything. They've always been there for me. And my best friend, my ex-husband, Ronald. I know people might think that's weird that you're best friends with your ex-husband, but I am. We get along very well. And I just want to thank my support group right there. And I know that I have other supporters out there that are always coming to see my shows. And I love you so much. Thank you. So I would definitely... I want to give a shout out to them as well. They know who they are. So thank you for the support.
And I'm sure they're listening.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Well, thank you again for coming. Charlotte, Marie, it's not over till the guests say it's over.
It's over.
Okay. We did it softly.